Those Sensational Years with Quinn Ryan. For 25 years, the versatile announcer Quinn Ryan has narrated into radio microphones the stories of the world's most stirring events. From the actual scene or the broadcasting studio, the American Broadcasting Company presents dramatized memories of our most sensational news stories, told by the noted radio reporter and commentator, Quinn Ryan.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? We are nearing the end of the most crowded half century in history. These programs are an anthology of the famous stories that we in radio covered during those years, and a parade of front-page history for the newer generation. Tonight I have a story of sports, of horses, and of Earl Sandy. Let's roll back the years and the radio dials.
1938.
That was the year when Johnny Vandermeer of the Cincinnati Reds pitched two no-hit games in 5 days over Boston and Brooklyn.
1932.
That was the year when I broadcast the World Series in which the New York Yankees beat the Chicago Cubs in 4 games.
1930.
And that was the year when we were singing Beyond the Blue Horizon, On the Sunny Side of the Street, and Give Me Something to Remember You By. Retired from the ring, Max Schmeling assumed the world heavyweight boxing championship when Jack Sharkey fouled him in the 4th round in Boston. That was the year when the Rose Bowl football game was won by Southern California over Pittsburgh, 47-14. And 1930 was the year when the turf fans of the world went wild as a great and gallant jockey chalked up his 3rd Kentucky Derby victory. The one and only Earl Sandy. The man whom turf riders described as being born with a clock in his head. So accurate is his judgment of pace and timing. It's always interesting to speculate on the whys and wherefores of the career of a man as successful as Earl Sandy. He has reached the top in his field. How did he do it? For our answer, let's look at Earl Sandy's story. It's an exciting one, an inspiring one, another example, an excellent example of the American way of life. Let's go back now to a day when Earl Sandy was 16. A significant day that was to start the boy down the road to destiny. Our scene is the Sandy Farm near American Falls, Idaho. It is morning, bright and clear, in midsummer. Astride a wild pony, and already aware of the values of a short stirrup and a bending position over the animal's neck, young Earl is engaging in one of his favorite pastimes, that of racing his pony and chasing his pet collie dog. Cutting back across the field now, the collie rapidly losing his lead, the boy is unaware of the stranger with the covered wagon, who is drawn up alongside the fence to watch the game, and who now gets down from the wagon and starts toward them across the field.
There! You boy, on the pony!
Okay, now that's enough. Okay, fella. Are you calling me, mister?
Yeah. Come over here a minute, will you? I'd like to talk to you.
Sure, be right there. Good boy, pony. We caught all over again. But game's over now, boy. Take it easy. Easy, boy.
Quite a pony you got there, young fella.
Isn't he a beauty?
You're a lucky boy to have an animal like that. You seem to know how to ride him, too.
Oh, boy. Oh. I sure ought to. I've been riding the horses around here ever since I was a little shaver. But this one's something special. I bought him myself with money I've been saving for 5 years.
Well, good for you. I take it, then, you really like riding.
Crazy about it. I've even been thinking if I practiced hard enough, I might get to be a jockey someday. I'm built for it.
Yes, you sure are, son. And I don't know who's been teaching you, but you got a lot of tricks learned already.
Gee, thanks. What was it you wanted to see me about, mister?
Well, let me introduce myself. I'm Thaddeus Jones. I have a small stable of racehorses in Boise.
Golly. You mean you race horses? Your own horses?
Sure do. Anywhere and everywhere I get a chance.
Golly.
What's your name, son?
Earl Sandy. I got dreams of being famous someday, too, like I told you.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you will. You see those two colts out there, tied up behind my wagon?
Yeah?
Just take a good look at those long, lean necks, those gleaming coats. I'm taking them down to Arizona to race them. There's only one trouble.
What's that?
I haven't got a rider for those horses.
Gee, that's tough, mister. What are you going to do?
Well, I don't quite know. Would you know of anybody who might be interested?
Well, I could... Oh, but... No, you probably want somebody professional, don't you?
Maybe. But what was it you started to say, son, before you checked yourself?
Well, I know of one fellow who's pretty good who might like a chance to race those horses.
Who's that? Can't imagine.
Me?
Do tell. You'd like to go all the way down to Arizona and ride for me?
I sure would, mister.
Can't pay you much. Not till we've won a few races, anyway.
Oh, that's all right. I could be learning, getting some real experience.
You think your folks would let you go?
Sure, if I explained it to them carefully.
Well, I'm willing to take a chance on you, son. In fact, that's really what I stopped here for in the first place. Though you're so doggone modest, you never got around to realizing it.
Golly. You mean you were going to ask me?
Sure was. I knew the minute I spotted you riding that pony, I needed you in my business.
Mister, can you wait right here just 10 minutes?
I'll wait, son. If you need any help convincing him, just call on your Uncle Fatty.
Thanks, mister. I'll be right back. I bet you now I can leave today, too, so don't go away, will you?
Thaddeus Jones stayed right there while young Earl got his parents' consent to go away. And only a short time later, the two were heading for Arizona. It was thus the future beckoned to Earl Sandy, and it was thus he followed without hesitation, ready for the hopes and the dreams of his youth to emerge and to flower into reality. All that summer, the 16-year-old boy rode horses in the Arizona County Fairs, and he worked hard and persistently, driven by one ambition, to learn, and to learn fast, how to be a good and experienced jockey. Soon he began to hear stories of New Orleans, where they said the horses were even faster, and the jockeys got good money. So the future beckoned again, and once more Earl Sandy followed, this time with a letter of introduction to one of the racetrack men in the romantic city of creoles, carnivals, and cotton. Now, on a morning a short time later, young Sandy, still hopeful, a little confused, but already on the threshold of success, is approaching the rail at a New Orleans track. Trainers, jockeys, stable boys are all gathered here, racing thoroughbreds, clocking them, talking shop.
Not bad at all, Hank. I think she could do a lot better, though. Why don't you take her around the track again? Let up on her a little. Let her have her own way.
Pardon me, mister.
What is it, young fella?
Can you tell me where I'll find Mr. Greenfield? Mr. Joe Greenfield?
Right here. What's on your mind?
Oh, I'm Earl Sandy. I have a letter of introduction from a friend of yours in Arizona, Mr. Thaddeus Jones.
Oh, yes. Good old Thad. How is the old codger?
Fine. I've been riding for him all summer.
Good enough. And now I take it you think you're ready for bigger and better things, eh?
Well, I'd like a chance anyway. I learned a lot from Mr. Jones this summer. You want to see the letter?
Yeah, I'm kind of busy, son. Can't you tell me what it's about?
Yes, sir. I'll come right to the point. Mr. Jones says... Well, he says he thinks I've proven myself pretty well. And maybe if you knew of an opening in one of the stables...
Well, jobs are pretty scarce, particularly right now at this season of the game.
But I'd do anything, Mr. Greenfield, anything to get a start here. Doesn't somebody need even an exercise, boy?
Well, I don't know of anybody at the moment. I'm sorry.
Oh, but gosh, Mr. Greenfield, there must be something I can do. I'm serious about this. I know I can make good.
You really think you're hot stuff, huh?
Yes, sir.
Well, you look like you might be a jockey someday.
Thanks, mister.
Can you gallop horses?
Yes, sir.
Then I'll tell you what you do. Take that mare there. Break her off of the 3/8 pole and work her a half a mile.
Oh, gosh, Mr. Greenfield, I don't know one pole from another. They didn't have those where I was.
Well, go ahead anyway. If you're good, we can straighten you out on the details later.
Yes, sir. I'll do my best, Mr. Greenfield. You show me what you want and I'll do it, just as you say.
In only 5 days, Earl Sandy was straight on the details. And on the fifth day, he was riding in his first real race. Wearing silks for the first time, seeing his name printed on the programs. Astride the 20-to-1 shot Liberator, however, his rapid climb to stardom was momentarily detoured when he brought the horse home second.
Gosh, Mr. Greenfield, I can't understand it. I should have won with Liberator.
Are you kidding, son? You did a great job to place him. That horse had no right to win.
Maybe not, but I should have showed him how.
Sandy took that loss to heart. It sharpened his determination, spurred him on in the next 12 months to 158 victories. Then the spring of 1919 and that amazing day at Havre de Grace. Losing the first race, he won both the second and the third. And while the stands watched in mounting surprise, saying to themselves, how nice for the kid to have a double after the first defeat, Sandy proceeded to put on a real show. With clock-like precision, he won the fourth and fifth races while people began to yell, "Bet on Sandy!" And then, for good measure, he finished first in the sixth and seventh races. Six straight victories after an initial defeat. Sandy was now justly rated by turf authorities and fans as a first-class jockey. His records read like something out of Paul Bunyan. 1920, home first 102 times, winner in 14 states. 1922, the beginning of his long association with Sam Hildreth, and his five big stake victories astride the immortal Gray Lady. 1923, the Kentucky Derby, and Sandy home first on Zev. The little black colt that was only a fair sprinter and was almost completely overlooked in the betting. And the same year, 1923, again on Zev, the victory over Papyrus in the famous international match race at Belmont. And then... August 5th, 1924, Saratoga. And the fateful day when the hearts of racetrack fans all over the world turned cold. When the star of their favorite idol, shining so brightly, seemed suddenly to drop from the heavens.
Did you bet on Sandy, Bruce?
Sure did. Good old Earl of Sandy. That guy's phenomenal. You know what? Uh-oh. There he is, hoisting up on Spurt.
Look at him smile, Bruce. Oh, what a beautiful horse Spurt is.
It doesn't much matter. Sandy could come in just as good on a broken-down zebra, believe you me.
Say, when are they going to get started?
Any second now. They're just lining up the nine horses. Keep your eyes on the barrier down there. You don't want to miss anything.
Mm-hmm. They get those horses awfully close together to start, don't they?
Post positions are always pretty close. They'll scatter fast enough as soon as they get going.
You know, it's a wonder they don't have more accidents.
Well, they do sometimes. Uh-oh. Watch it now. They're just about ready. Watch the starter.
There they go!
Wow! Look at them fly!
Sandy,
watch him move up. You'll get ahead in no time.
Reporters wanted to see me.
Yeah, Doc. What's the dope on Sandy? The people are clamoring for news. We've got to give them something. Something hopeful if we can.
I'm afraid there's nothing very hopeful to give them.
Is it as bad as that?
Very bad. Earl Sandy got the worst of that whole accident. His foot's front legs buckled, and Sandy tried to raise him with his knees. But it was too late. They trampled all over him.
Surely nothing can happen to him, Doc. It wouldn't be fair.
There's a serious fracture of the left thigh and a possible fracture of the ribs at the apex of the heart. And he says his neck and chest hurt him. We're doing the best we can, but...
You mean he may not even recover?
At the moment, the odds are pretty much against it. And even if he does recover, we know one thing for certain already.
Well, what is it?
Earl Sandy will never ride again.
Shocking news of Earl Sandy's misfortune at Saratoga ticked over the telegraph, mournfully sounded over our radio microphones. And the cycle of public interest was typical of the cycles in most tragedies of this kind. First, incredulity. Sandy, only 24 years old, at the peak of his career, this horrible thing couldn't destroy him. Then sympathy. Gradual acceptance of the facts. Then, the ironic stage of the cycle. The gradual forgetting of the once great idol. The thoughtless speculation about a successor. Meanwhile, Sandy lay on his bed of pain, month after month, his shattered leg in a cast held high by pulleys. With long, capable hands, he reached for the strings that worked the pulleys when the pain was unendurable. And he twisted and yanked those strings, much as he had done to the reins of the horses he had hand-ridden home. A persistent faith kept hope alive within him, kept riding with him as he fought his determined way along the road to recovery. Of 1925, 9 months after the Saratoga accident. At Havre de Grasse, several jockeys, trainers, and stable boys are gathered at the track to clock the horses and to talk over prospects for the season. Activities are fairly routine, totally out of key for the sensation that is just about to happen.
Sam, am I dreaming? Look who's coming towards us across the infield.
Well, I'll be doggone. Boss, it can't be.
But it is. It's Earl Sandy. Now, what in the world is he doing out here?
He don't look too strong, does he, boss? He look kind of pale and shaky.
Well, why not? After all, he's been going through. Hey, Earl. Earl. For Pete's sake, Earl, how are you?
Hi, fellas. Glad to see you.
Oh, it's nice to see you too, boy. Boy, how goes it? How are you feeling?
Okay. I'm doing fine.
You come out to watch the fun for a change?
No. Come out to get a little exercise, if you don't mind. How about you guys hoisting me up on one of these horses?
What? You must be crazy, Earl. You can't ride in your condition.
What's the matter with my condition?
Well, but I thought that you... I mean, I thought the doctor...
Sure, boy. Sure, we give you a hint. How's this here coat? Like him, okay?
Looks fine to me.
Just take it a little easy now.
Why don't you rest your hand on my shoulder, boy?
Thanks. It's a good idea. All right, up. We go and over.
Boy, oh boy. It sure feels good to be up again. You guys just don't know. Couldn't. How long I've waited for this day.
Earl Sandy walked the horse. Then galloped the horse while the crowds along the track stopped what they were doing to watch and to admire. Nervous at first, they gradually accepted the fact that Sandy had come back. And as the jockey idol raced around the track, he wanted to shout with joy, for the leg which had pained him for so many months no longer hurt him now. Only a few days later, in the Newark Handicap, Sandy rode the Vanderbilt entry Saracen to victory and set a new track record for 6 furlongs of 1:11. Exactly 2 months later, 1925, he won his second Kentucky Derby, this time on Flying Ebony. Sandy was once again head man, and the flying procession of victories continued through 1926, 27, 29, and 30. And then the biggest and most spectacular victory of all, May 17th, 1930. Derby day again at Churchill Downs. Earl Sandy and Gallant Fox, and the race that made history. There's a bugle call. There's a bugle call, ladies and gentlemen, boots and saddles. Oh, here it is. They're starting the parade from the paddock onto the track now. Black clouds have spilled a steady drizzle for an hour. The track is wet but not slow. This is Quinn Ryan broadcasting from Churchill Downs at Louisville with my 6th annual account of the Bluegrass Classic since I originated its broadcast back in 1925. Well, oh, do you hear that? That's the minute we wait for all the time, every year. Here's the black and white lead pony coming onto the strip as the band in the clubhouse gives us My Old Kentucky Home. This is the climax of all the months of training, speculation, chatter, and festivities. The throngs in the streets, the green and white barns and the fences, the acres of flowers. And 70,000 folks who don't seem to have heard a word about last October's stock market crash. Gallant Fox still reigns the favorite. Now with the 14 other aristocrats, he's mincing along in the long parade, the reverse way of the track, up to the quarter-mile pole to our left. And while the Fox is the heavy favorite here today, the drama hangs on these factors. Just a week ago today, Sandy won the Preakness on Gallant Fox. Can he do the same thing today? Only one other jockey, Johnny Loftus, has won the Preakness and the Derby in the same year. Can Sandy come through today for his third Derby victory, thereby equaling the record of the great little Negro jockey, Isaac Murphy, that pride of another generation who rode 3 mounts to win the Shawl of Roses in 1884, 90, and 91? Well, we'll soon see. The race is just about to begin. Oh, by the way, the guest of honor today, as you probably know, is the Earl of Derby, who has come 5,000 miles from England, the first of his long line to see the race named for his family. It's Derby to him, he says, but it's Derby to us here in Kentucky. Still raining. Now comes that emotional hush as starter Bill Hamilton lines them up. They're very calm today, the rain pouring over them. The assistant starters now running around on the track, leading them into the chutes. The horses, some motionless, some dancing sideways. Hard to peer through this rain in the binoculars. Alcibiades, the only filly in the field of 15, is very still. They're off! And here they come, three of them dashing into the lead. Alcibiades in front, and Tannery and Buckeye Poet, the Kentucky favorite, second. There was a little bumping there, and Gallant Fox is in a big scramble coming straight down the center. Jockey Willie Garner is hustling Tannery to avoid being caught in the jam at the first turn, which has ruined so many Derby contenders. Now they're flying past the gold post to the finish line. 15 silk-draped jockeys leaning over the horse's heads in the first challenge of speed. Now they're bending around the curve, and Earl Sandy is jockeying for position and racing room, and he's moving up from his 8th position to 5th. Alcibiades has South Spring of the Mall still leading. Next, Cannery and Buckeye Port neck and neck. Ben Crack Brigade. Now they're steering into the backstretch. And in about a dozen strides, Gallant Fox is shooting up there with the leaders. He may do it after all. At the half mile, it's Alcibiades in the lead. Gallant Fox is pushing his red hood ahead of Buckeye Port and Cannery and kicking balls of mud back at them. Crack Brigade is moving forward in fifth place. Gosh, it's all Gallant Fox and Sandy now, passing Alcibiades. The red and white colors of the William Woodward stables are streaking out. At three quarters, it's Gallant Fox a length ahead of Alcibiades. Cannery a length behind, a half length. Crack Brigade is neck and neck with Gallant Knight, who's climbing from far back with Ned O. Well, it's smooth sailing for Sandy and the New York horse. Earl Sandy has set his pace and opened up as much daylight as he wants. Ladies and gentlemen, this is form and class. Alcibiades is failing badly. Gallant Fox now by two lengths. And Crack Brigade now ahead in front of Gallant Knight, who is closing up. And as they glide around the far turn, Alcibiades is fourth by five lengths with Ned O fifth. Gallant Fox is running easily and Sandy is moving him in from the rail. Here he comes into the home stretch now. The other Gallant Knight is straining every tendon and moving into second place. And Ned O is showing a cyclone rush as he is steered around the bunch and neck with Crack Brigade. Now to the finish. Look at that. Earl Sandy looks back at Gallant Knight and gives his mount the whip once. They're pounding on here toward us now in the imaginary finish line. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Gallant Fox wins by two lengths in front of Gallant Knight, who sails past two lengths ahead of Ned O. And the freckle-faced man with the crimson cap and the red-spotted blouse, Earl Sandy, wins his third Kentucky Derby. Not long after that famous third Derby victory, Earl Sandy hung up his tack and retired from active racing. He now lives in the East, near the tracks he loves, training and racing horses. Overall, he has a record of 5,000 starts and nearly 1,000 wins in 12 seasons, a phenomenal record, a record that classes him, in all probability, as the foremost jockey in American turf history.
You have heard Quinn Ryan in Those Sensational Years, another in a series of stories that stirred the nation. Earl Sandy was impersonated by Charles Flynn. Thad Jones was played by George Kluge. The script was written by Harrison Y. Bingham with Roy W. Windsor. Original music was written by Bruce Chase and conducted by Rex Morgan. The program was produced and directed by Fred Killian. Your narrator for these programs is Quinn Ryan, a man who pioneered as a radio commentator and reporter. A man whose own career parallels the dramatic events of radio's crowded years. Next week, the story of a real-life bluebird. But there's a surprise for you as you recall another memorable story. Listen then for Those Sensational Years.